Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors.
Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck, listen and subscribe.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency. It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Evil. That's what we're dealing with. We should be able to speak out about it. Dr. Peter McCullough's coming on. Nuclear war, a great light in the mood. All that's coming up tonight on I'm Right. Good and evil. We're not supposed to talk about that stuff, right? Certainly not when it comes to politics. Definitely not if you're on the right, traditional conservative type. I mean, you've heard it forever. They'll call you evil and monster, and the communists will. They'll call you all these things. But we're not supposed to speak that way. Let's work together. That's too divisive. Let's come on. It's just politics. It's just the slight differences. But we've been so naive for so long. And I'm not pointing fingers at other people. I'm sure for a time, once I started to get politically interested, I'm sure for a time I was right there too. Maybe with this pie in the sky notion that it's just left versus right and that's all fine. But I'll be honest with you. When I see the level of evil out there now, I looked back at old Jesse and his naive way of looking at things, and boy, he was dead wrong. I was dead wrong. You know, I'll tell you, I'm a fan of history. I'm a big fan of history. You probably are too. I would argue if you're not a fan of history, that's because you've never heard it from someone who actually loves it. But anyway, I'll set that aside. I'm a big fan of history. And one of the things I find fascinating about history is the horrible parts of it. It's not because I have some bloodlust or something like that, or I love hearing about horrible things. That's not it. I find it fascinating to look at horrific things men did to other men and try to wrap my mind around what I'm looking at. How is that possible? Because if you look at the breadth of human history and the things men have done, it doesn't seem possible. Like, it almost seems like you're reading fiction. It's removed. For instance, the Aztecs. Just a little brief history in case you don't know. The Aztecs were the Indians of Mexico, right? They were the most powerful tribe in Mexico. The Mayans were really big down there too, yes, but the Aztecs had overtaken them. And the Aztecs were this gigantic major civilization in Mexico. And I do mean major. In fact, the Europeans, who we'll get to in a moment, when they got to their capital, the Aztec capital, they said that is more beautiful than any capital that exists in Europe. It was like a capital that they built in the middle of a lake with floating gardens and all kinds. It was supposed to be jaw-dropping. You hear the descriptions of it now, and it's jaw-dropping. So we're not talking about some small backwater people. We're talking about the civilization in the old Mexico. But then you dig into the Aztecs, and you find out not just the endless amounts of human sacrifice they did. They were very big on that. They were huge on not only cutting your heart out with a flint knife in front of everyone on top of a temple. They would chop your body up and chuck it down the steps. Then sometimes, instead of doing that, if they really wanted to honor you, I'm not making this up, they would skin you and then walk around wearing your skin. But that's not even the worst of it. I realize all that's really bad. The Aztecs believed in human sacrifices, I just pointed out, for their gods, for various things. You know, I want sun, I want rain, I want the, you know how it goes. They believed children were uniquely able to provide some of those sacrificial benefits to their gods. And the Aztecs not only would do that same thing to children, carve their hearts out while they were still alive, mind you, they believed the child needed to cry first. So if you got a child up there and getting ready to carve his heart out and he's not crying, you have to make him cry. They would torture children and then cut their hearts out to sacrifice. Now, maybe you're sitting there saying, Jesse, this is horrible. This is awful. I can't believe they're doing it. Wait, it's a little bit worse when you put this in perspective. It's not that they were doing that to children. It's that all the people, they would gather around the bottom of the temple and they would watch this. And while they were watching this, they weren't sitting there screaming out in horror, stop, save the kids! As they watched children being tortured and killed in front of them, they would cheer and yell and beg for more. Now, I would read stories like that. I used to. In the not too distant history, I would read stories like that, and I would try to... It didn't seem real, right? That sounds like something out of a horror movie I just described. It's horrible. It's awful, isn't it? And it doesn't seem... I mean, look, I've known some bad people, but that's not something people are capable of. It doesn't seem real. It does now. It makes total sense to me now. What we've done in this country, what I watch is these American communists do to children. When I sit and think about, those Aztecs are evil. Yeah, we killed 63 million unborn babies in this country. 63 million. On top of the mutilation stuff, which we'll get to in a moment. Now, you weren't standing around Planned Parenthood cheering while 63 million children were murdered. I hope not, at least. I assume you weren't. But you also know that that's happening, that that's happened, and it's real. And that is the established position of the Democratic Party in this country. Joe Biden took to social media and said, my dad used to say, Joey, don't compare me to the Almighty, compare me to the alternative. So you're comparing yourself to Satan? Which is kind of odd because I guess that's appropriate. The satanic temple of this country, do you know what they share in common with the entire Democratic Party? Not just Joe Biden, the entire Democratic Party. They share the exact same abortion position of the entire Democratic Party. Again, every single United States senator who's a Democrat believes you should abort a baby up to birth. So it's not just California. Now, what's California doing? Well, something pretty California. Quote, the state shall not deny or interfere with an individual's reproductive freedom and their most intimate decisions, which includes the fundamental right to choose to have an abortion and their fundamental right to choose or refuse contraceptives. What do all those big words mean? That means they believe that baby who's about to be born, that fully formed, very much alive, unique, precious soul, the stated position of not just California, but the Democratic Party in the United States of America is that that baby you're seeing right there should have its limbs chopped off, its brain vacuumed out of its head, and then chucked in a trash room with the other dead babies. Now you tell me, is it just the Aztecs? You tell me, what makes us better? And when you hear people like AOC and how they discuss the extinguishing of a human life, you tell me, is this right or wrong, or is this good versus evil?
I think it's important to state that that abortion is an economic issue. Forcing poor and working class people to give birth against their will, against their consent, against their ability to provide for themselves or a child is a profound economic issue.
An economic issue. You're telling me these people look at that child and they only see economics and they see it to be beneficial economically if you just chop it up into pieces and chuck it in the trash. You're telling me that's not evil? What other word can be used to describe such a thing? And while we're on the subject of kids and evil, let's do discuss what's happening right now in this country, and it's happening out in the open. Oh, those Aztecs punishing the kids. Man, what an evil society. Yeah, you know what they use to chemically castrate sex offenders? It's a drug. Doesn't matter if you know the name, but they'll put something into your body to chemically castrate them. You understand that's the same drug they're using to puberty block teenage boys in this country. And it may not be done at the top of a temple, but it's being done in the doctor's office, white lab coat. I'm a doctor, I'm a pediatrician, I'm here to take care of you. And surprise, Planned Parenthood, after killing 63 million unborn, they're getting in on the action.
Your gender identity is real. You should be the one to decide what changes you want to make to your body. If you're transgender or non-binary, you may find that your puberty experiences don't line up with your gender identity or how you see yourself. That feeling can be uncomfortable, scary, and stressful. If that sounds like you, know that you're not alone. There are medicines you can take to delay puberty for a while. They're called puberty blockers, and they work like a stop sign by halting the hormones testosterone and estrogen that cause puberty changes like facial hair growth and periods. Puberty blockers are safe and can give you more time to figure out what feels right for you, your body, and your gender identity. You don't have to have all of the answers right now. So remember, it's all a work in progress, and it may take time to figure out what feels right to you, but talking to a trusted adult and a nurse or doctor may help. Want to learn more? Go to PlannedParenthood.org/teens.
What is that? Is it right versus wrong? Or is it good versus evil? And do keep this in mind as we finish this up, because we have a bunch of other stuff we need to get to. Do keep this in mind. It's not just that the freaks at Planned Parenthood are doing that. The major medical institutions of this country, they're not only doing it, they're trying to ban you from speaking out against it. The three major American medical institutions just wrote a letter to the Department of Justice asking them to criminalize people who speak out against these things. Criminalize, that means you, average Joe. No, I don't think 13-year-old boys should cut their penis off. The major medical institutions of this country believe you should be arrested for that stance. Do you still think it's right versus wrong? Let's grow up and wake up and realize we are dealing with something much worse here. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Speaking of evil, Dr. Peter McCullough is going to join me next, and we're going to talk about the people who punished and abused us during COVID. Who are they? Who are the players of this game? How bad are they? We'll talk to him about that in a second. Now, before we talk to him about that, I am positive you have seen the economic news in it's really, really bad. I know that. I know that this talk of war now with Ukraine and Russia pulling everyone else into it, I know you know that's really bad. I know you know things are bad. All I'm going to say is this. All we can do is make little preparations, right? There's nothing you can do to prepare yourself for the end of the world. Prepare yourself for major economic dislocation and then pray it doesn't happen. That's all you can do. Prepare and pray. That's it. Do you have an emergency 3-month food kit for every person in your home? If you don't, that's fine. That's the norm. Don't feel guilty, but it is time to do something about it. My friends at My Patriot Supply, they have partnered with the show. What do they provide? Emergency 3-month food kits. Already done. Ready to go. It ships free, and it ships fast, and it ships to your home anonymously. So you don't have to worry about your neighbors knowing what you have. And they're offering $150 off every 3-month food kit. Everyone in your home needs an emergency 3-month food kit. If you live alone, just buy one. It's fine. If you live with 4 people, buy 4 of them. Go to preparewithjessekelly.com and get yours today. Preparewithjessekelly.com. We'll be back.
Each morning, the President of the United States receives a highly classified briefing on the most important issues facing the country. It's called the President's Daily Brief, or PDB. It's delivered by America's spies and analysts. Well, now you can hear your very own PDB in the form of a podcast hosted by me, Brian Dean Wright, a former CIA operations officer. Each morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, I'll bring you 15 to 20 minutes of the most important issues facing the country, giving you the critical intelligence and analysis you need to start your morning.
We talk a lot about how there should be a reckoning for what was done to this country during COVID, for how much they abused you, abused your rights, abused your dollar, abused your children. Well, apparently we are going to get some sort of a reckoning, just not at all the way you want. California, they're on the cusp of passing a bill, AB 2098, It will allow the state medical board to punish doctors who do what? Who actually tell the truth about COVID. Doctors like Peter McCullough, who's been on the front lines of actually telling the truth of this thing from the very beginning. He's a COVID expert, author of the book, The Courage to Face COVID-19. Okay, doctor, let's go all the way back to the beginning. I know you've talked about this ad nauseum, but in your profession, it doesn't always pay to swim against the tide. You swam against the tide hard and early. Why?
Patients were being slaughtered by the virus. I couldn't sit by and watch it happen. I knew that these drugs weren't perfect, but we could use oral drugs in combination early at home and prevent hospitalizations and deaths. Later on, we were significantly advantaged with monoclonal antibodies offered through the emergency use authorization mechanism. But what I learned early is that COVID-19 is a complicated illness. It has multiple phases, and the patients who are at high risk are complicated to begin with. They're older and they're on many medications. So this was never something amenable to a government narrative.
Okay, doctor, explain to me then, because I personally have lost so much faith in our medical institutions. I know I'm not alone, especially over the last 2 years. But people have traditionally, they look at doctors, they see that education level, they see the fancy degree on the wall, and they expect that doctor, I expect my doctor to be a whole lot smarter than me when it comes to medical issues, a lot smarter than me. And yet our medical institutions were stupid, to put it mildly. How does that happen when you have a bunch of people educated at Harvard and Johns Hopkins?
It started out with fear. I'm convinced that doctors initially were so fearful of the virus, they were afraid of getting it themselves. They happily closed their clinics. They didn't answer calls from very sick patients with COVID-19, and they let them pour into emergency rooms and then become hospitalized. So that's the reason why our book is titled Courage to Face COVID-19. There was a small group of doctors that said that they're going to fulfill their duty to treat, and that small group of doctors did establish the community standard of care. There's always been a community standard of care that's predicated on treating the infection very early before it gets out of control.
Then explain to me, you mentioned the medications. I'm assuming, I don't want to put words in your mouth, you're talking about things like hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. Explain to me why that was so roundly rejected by everyone, not just politicians, doctors, the FDA came out and made fun of the even suggestion of ivermectin. Why were early drugs that you mentioned, why were they rejected by so many?
We saw unprecedented moves. You know, before the COVID-19 pandemic even occurred, months before, in France, they took hydroxychloroquine off the over-the-counter market, made it prescription. Australia, quickly after COVID-19 started, made it punishable by imprisonment if a doctor used hydroxychloroquine. And it turned out hydroxychloroquine was modestly effective. It had its big use in the first year of the pandemic. Ivermectin, more dynamic and more effective once we found the proper weight-based dosing. And then, you know, we moved on to Paxlovid, molnupiravir, monoclonal antibodies. So it never was about a single drug. It was always about using drugs in combination. But there appeared to be a plan to try to demonize early treatment in order to promote fear, suffering, hospitalization, and death. And I think the people who actually worked the hardest to suppress hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin were those working also equally hard to promote the vaccines.
I'm glad you brought up the vaccines. These are not new now. We now have tons of study subjects available. What's the vaccine doing? Is it working? Is it hurting people? Is it killing people? What do you see right now?
We always discuss safety first, and it is astonishing to report that the vaccine has been associated with large numbers of deaths that have occurred very shortly after receiving the vaccine. Our CDC is telling us that there's over 2,000 confirmed Americans who have died within 24 hours of taking the shot. That's astonishing. Typically, a drug would be taken off the market after about 5 deaths, certainly no more than 50 deaths. Pfizer's now revealed in court-ordered documents they knew about 1,223 deaths within 90 days of release of their product worldwide. We don't know the total number of deaths because only a small fraction are reported. A doctor has to have the vaccine card in order to report a death, so many times we don't have it. It is some large number. A massive number of people have died shortly after receiving the vaccine. And it actually is biologically plausible because the vaccines have the genetic code for the lethal Wuhan spike protein. That's the lethal part of the virus. People who are taking the vaccine are taking the genetic code for a lethal protein. And in some people, it's too much, in the wrong place for too long, and it's fatal.
Okay, how is this information not... How is this information not resulting in the vaccines being pulled off the market? They're still approving boosters every other day, pushing this on children. Explain to me the divide there, because that's staggering.
Well, the first order of responsibility is the manufacturer. So Pfizer, as the lead manufacturer, had a duty to pull their product off the market. That was even before Moderna and J&J came out. So when Pfizer knew that there were excess numbers of deaths and they were pouring in December of 2020, Pfizer had a responsibility to pull off the market. Now the FDA, who is overseeing the overall program, they also had a responsibility to talk to Pfizer and tell them to make a voluntary recall, pull them off the market. If they didn't, the FDA could have ordered it. But we now know that the FDA attempted to block this information about Pfizer vaccine deaths to the public for 55 years. So this is prima facie evidence that the FDA is involved in a drug safety cover-up, a deadly drug safety cover-up with Pfizer.
Okay, so doctor, explain to me, if the FDA is in cahoots with the CDC and in cahoots with the big pharma to push drugs on the American public that will kill them, how in the world is the average American supposed to overcome that? Because that's pretty much what we rely on.
Right, the public relies on the FDA to protect them. The FDA should be in no position to promote mass vaccination. They should be protected against the dangers of mass vaccination. And now everything is off the rails. Americans have to take matters into their own hands. The only way to stay safe from these vaccines is to decline them. Sadly, most Americans feel under pressure from school or employment or travel or sometimes their own family to take one of these vaccines. And not only the immediate risk of death, but the FDA says the vaccines cause heart damage, blood clots, and neurologic damage. The FDA is warning Americans that, in fact, these happen, but they haven't taken the big step, and that is just pull them off the market. And all of them are equally dangerous. Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, and now we have reports of heart damage and blood clotting with Novavax.
Oh, gosh. All right. You know what? Let's move on to masks really quickly. I'll be honest, this is one of the ones that was just such a staggering moment for me watching this take hold across the nation. It was just out of the blue. Immediately, people began to believe the mask on your face was protecting them, and this became some sort of a virtue signal across the country. People flocked to these things, and I still see some, not many, but still see some wearing them. Can you explain to me the psychology behind accepting that? Is that just a media thing?
It was initially fear, and then our agencies gave dictatorial but yet erratic recommendations on masks. Remember the types of masks. It was all over the place. And you know, just a few days ago, you know what the CDC finally settled it? You know what they said? The CDC said nobody needs to wear a mask unless somebody has COVID-19, if we're a healthcare worker and we're encountering a sick COVID patient. So now we're back to the usual things. We wouldn't wear a mask unless we encountered, like, say, a sick tuberculosis patient. So now we're back down to just the medical use of masks. And we poor Americans have suffered through 3 years of public masking, all of which was not needed. And our CDC, far too late, has simply told us, go back to our usual practices, which is what we do for other respiratory illnesses.
Doctor, finally, I have my buddy Steve Dace on. He talks about a lot of COVID reckoning stuff like I do. He actually wrote a book on it, too. Here's what Steve had to say. I think you'll find it interesting. Who runs it? Because I want it. Who runs it? It needs to happen. Who can pull this off?
We need a similar kind of a Nuremberg tribunal. And I have the perfect person to oversee it. Dr. Peter McCullough, from your native state of Texas, is arguably the most decorated cardiologist in the history of this country. And he has authored numerous medical journals. His biography is cited on at least a dozen major universities in this country. And everything that he has warned about, everything that he has said, has all been proven true. Put him in charge of it.
Okay, doctor, you're in charge of our make-believe COVID tribunal. Who were the actors that you would haul in? Who were the worst? Is it Fauci? Is it someone I don't see? Is it Rochelle Walensky? Who were the people that did this to us? Because people have a right to know, and you know the players, I don't.
You know, in our book, Courage to Face COVID-19, we outline what we term the biopharmaceutical complex. The biopharmaceutical complex is basically a syndicate. And at the very top, we believe it's the World Economic Forum, the Gates Foundation, the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness and Innovation, founded by Gates and the WEF, World Health Organization, Wellcome Trust, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Chinese Communist Party, Gavi, the EcoHealth Alliance, CDC, NIH, and FDA. And then the suppliers are the vaccine manufacturers. This is a biopharmaceutical complex. They are working as basically a syndicate. And when they declare emergency medical emergencies, they're using that as a mechanism for pre-purchase of products and then draining treasuries dry. It's thrown us into this inflationary spiral. This is a crime on a worldwide global magnitude. Billions of dollars are involved in this crime. And sadly, millions and millions of lives have been lost. Tens, if not hundreds of millions of people have been unnecessarily hospitalized. And it's not just me. It should be a giant panel of doctors, ethicists, PhD scientists, sociologists, criminal justice experts. And everyone involved in this syndicate should be called to justice.
Amen. Doctor, please give out the name of your book again for people.
Courage to Face COVID-19, Preventing Hospitalizations and Deaths While Battling the Biopharmaceutical Complex. Go to the website, CourageToFaceCOVID.com.
Doctor, I appreciate you. Come back soon.
Thank you.
All right. These people in the White House, Joe Biden, Dome, I swear they're going to get us in a nuclear war. I can see it coming. It's amazing. We'll talk about that in a second. Now let's talk about something else. I'm never going to get my COVID reckoning. We're never going to get Dr. Peter McCullough overseeing a trial. It's just the bad players, the bad guys, they're too ingrained in every different nation right now. It's not going to happen. We can talk about it. We can call for it. Maybe we'll get something, but we're never going to get what we can. So we have to do what we can do to provide our own reckoning, right? Now, what is that? Well, wouldn't you like to know which businesses in your area fell in line and immediately worked with that syndicate to crush your rights, and which businesses stood up and stood tall for freedom? I think I would like to reward the good guys and punish the bad guys by taking away my money. People ask me all the time, Jesse, we need a list of good companies, a list of the companies that share our values. There is a list. It's right here. It's on your phone already. Download Public SQ from the App Store. Whatever you have, Apple, Android, doesn't matter. Public SQ. That's where your list is. Go and put your money where your morals are all the time. Public SQ. Download it today. We'll be back. You know what's not great? Nuclear winter. That's just generally not great. Yeah, it's something I think we don't think. That's probably not a way to put that. Either way, I think we don't think about this enough because the prospects of it are so scary. Like the reality of what it looks like is so scary that it's just something you kind of try to put out of your mind. But we are now, we are now in possession of weapons that can kill every human being on the planet with relative ease. It's crazy to think about, but we not only are in possession of these weapons, people are threatening to use them on each other already. Russia's threatening to use them. North Korea threatening to use them. Right about the time I was sitting down in this chair last night to bring you I'm Right on television, I got the weirdest notification on my phone. I'm sitting there, I'm getting ready to start the show, and something pops up, and I look. North Korea had fired a ballistic missile at Japan, and the Japanese people were being told to get to shelter. It was a ballistic missile, by the grace of God, that went over Japan. Now, I don't know what over means. How high exactly are we talking about here? But it went over Japan and landed without any problems. And it did occur to me, man, Dome was just over there.
So the United States shares a very important relationship, which is an alliance with the Republic of North Korea.
We are in possession of enough weapons to end the planet, and we have the dumbest people on Earth running the country. So, sleep well. All right, we got more. Grandma Vodka thinks she went on late night TV and lied through her false teeth. Get to that in a moment. Before we get to that, let's get to this. Eden Pure. You know, we talk about how it's fixed my allergies. And it cleans my air out so my family's healthier. It's just this little black box goes right in the outlet and the wall kills viruses and mold. The thing's so miraculous, I wonder if it can clean out the radiation from a nuclear blast. I don't know, I'll have to get a hold of Eden Pure. I don't think it can do that. But in all seriousness, it fixed my allergies. I had allergies for 20 years. All of a sudden, some little black box fixes them? No. I bought one. I was so in love with the thing, I went out and bought two more. You can have a three-pack, too. They're selling three packs for my viewers. You have to go to EdenPureDeals.com. Code Jesse gets you $200 off a three-pack. EdenPureDeals.com. Code Jesse. We'll be back.
What is your prediction for the election that's a little bit more than a month away? Madam Speaker, you have the floor.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, I'm so glad you asked that question because I believe that we will win the hold the House. And we will hold the House by winning more seats. We won the 40 seats. Then we lost some when Trump was on the ballot. We lost some in the Trump districts. But we held enough seats to hold the House with him on the ballot. He's not on the ballot now. Oh, did I say his name? I didn't mean to.
Okay. Grandma Vodka, sounding remarkably lucid, actually. Applause to her for that. Joining me now, my friend Rich Barris, known as the People's Pundit, director of the Big Data Poll. All right, Rich, now let's just assume that's Grandma Vodka doing some, you know, propaganda on Colbert. I'm not going to read too much into that. But let's focus on what the midterms are actually looking like. I, stupid guy, not professional pollster, I think it looks like an unavoidable bloodbath for them. Is that wishful thinking?
You know, I think she said something there that actually was remarkable, which is she flatly admitted, despite what all the forecasters on her side of the aisle say, she flatly admitted that Trump being on the ballot is a net positive for Republicans. Isn't that kind of funny? But look, you know, the fact is there are over 200, about 220 seats that either leans or likely or safe Republican. There's 184 Democratic seats that are lean, likely or safe Democrat. Let's call it 38 in the middle that everybody's looking at. The vast majority of them are easier for Republicans to pick up than they are for Democrats. So even if it's, you know, true what she said, which is that they have a modest advantage, they're not overextended the way they were in 18, it is still a first term incumbent midterm. You know, Jesse, the most astonishing thing to me this year has been people who do this for a living, their reluctance to admit what everyone knows to be true, which is that even popular presidents are in deep trouble in first term incumbent midterms. Their parties, they get hit. This is the way it goes, with the rare exception being post 9/11 under George W. Bush, simply because something happened that year that doesn't normally happen. The in-power party dominated on the issues that were most important to voters. That was national security that year. This year, the issue is not abortion, which they hinged everything on. The issue is cost of living and inflation. Beyond that, jobs in the economy. And abortion is typically tied with number 3, 4, 5. Down there with other issues like immigration, which Republicans also dominate on. The issues decide elections, and they favor Republicans.
Okay. Now explain this to me, Rich, because I genuinely don't get it. You see the national polls, all these national polls. I'm sure a lot of them are crap, but they all show the Democratic Party being incredibly unpopular. the Republican Party, not exactly, the people aren't thrilled with that either, but a lot more popular than Democrats currently are, as you kind of pointed out. Yet it doesn't sound like you foresee this bloodbath. How is it that Democrats are more secure than we are when they're less popular than we are?
Yeah, I think they raised a lot of money. There is some X factors this election, but I just don't think it's going to cost the Republicans a midterm election. The X factors being that Donald Trump's candidates got through the lion's share of these primaries and the leadership is not happy about it. So, you know, I've seen things this cycle that I've never seen before. I have seen the majority or the minority leader who hopes to be speaker. I've seen him take 3 weeks to a month to call a candidate after they won their primary, even though they're in a battleground district that they absolutely could and should carry in November. It's a little bit of self-sabotage here. But that being said, the American people, the way these things go, the American people end up having their say. And look, you know, they abandoned Pat Citarelli and Republicans in New Jersey. Look what happened anyway. They threw nothing into Brad Finstad's race in Minnesota 1, yet he still got the largest share for a Republican candidate in the last four election cycles. So at the end of the day, look at some of these polls that did come out this week. It's bad news for Joe Biden. Monmouth, ABC, a lot of people, I don't think they're all great polls by any measure, but trends are trends. And the big question was whether or not ABC picked up on a trend, an early trend. And we're looking at right track, wrong track, which is predictive. It's now back to negative 50 in Monmouth. So, yeah, it's why I'm itching to get a generic ballot myself again real soon here nationally. We're polling a lot of states, but I'm dying to get another generic ballot right now.
Okay, you said they're not great polls. Now, I don't know what that means. What's a good poll? What's a bad poll? What's a not great poll? The average person, you know, I mean, you're the expert. I'm not. Most people aren't. What am I supposed to be looking at? What am I looking for?
That ABC News poll, that is the poll that infamously gave Joe Biden a 17-point lead in the state of Wisconsin about 2 days before the election. Of course, that was outrageous, just really indefensible. The Monmouth poll has, not just in battleground states, but nationally, has tended to understate Republican support. I just brought up New Jersey. They had Pat Citarelli losing to Governor Phil Murphy. By about 12 points. It was double digits. In the end, that was a nail biter. He was forced to write an article the next day questioning whether or not he should still even be a pollster. I mean, so, you know, there are some polls that are just not just wrong, Jesse. They're outside their own sampling errors, and they can repeatedly do this in one direction, which means they're not overstating Democrats one race, overstating Republicans the next race. They are all overstating Democratic support. And that's because of, you know, certain groups are just harder to reach. But, you know, you got to take that into consideration when you look at their results.
What's that mean, harder to reach? Because a lot of people will see that and they see how much they always over-skew towards Democrats. And they immediately say to themselves, oh, all the polling companies are to the left. They're all manipulating these things. I'm sure some of the times that's true. But you mentioned harder to reach. So Republicans are harder to reach?
Yeah. They are, and Republican-leaning groups, even if they don't consider themselves to be, you know, solid or strong Republicans. You know, different groups of people respond to different modes of collection. So how do we reach out to people? Is it online? Is it through their cell phone? Is it a landline? Different modes that we collect. They all do this at different rates for each of these modes. So liberals and metro-educated voters are basically easy to reach across the board. They sign up for online panels. They're dying to, you know, click the button and tell you Orange Man bad 24 hours a day. They love it. When you call them on the phone, they just can't wait to spend 20 minutes on the phone with you to enlighten you about their opinion because, of course, they know better. However, work in Pennsylvania or, you know, a welder, and they just got off at 6:30 at night. They're about to pop in the Hungry Man's down in front of the game in their favorite chair, and the last thing they want to do is talk to a pollster. So you have to get creative to reach them, and then once you engage them, to keep them engaged. And media pollsters, they're not able to do that at all.
All right, which brings us, that was a lot of talk about the House. This is what Senator Rick Scott of Florida had to say about the Senate.
Senate Republicans trying to get them to win the Senate. Do you believe the Republicans are on track to get control of the Senate?
Well, most of my effort right now is on the hurricane relief. This is a hurricane, but absolutely. I think we're at 52 states plus.
52 states, 52 Senate seats sounds really nice to me, but is that wishful thinking? I want to believe, Rich, can I?
That's where we're at right now. And that's if that's without the state of Arizona, that's without New Hampshire. I think these are all states that I've polled myself. Wisconsin is a must hold for Republicans. We were the first ones out in Wisconsin to show Ron Johnson with a lead. And it was, by the way, a more comfortable lead than we found for him in 16. So I think he's good there. By the way, I think Tony Evers is in deep trouble and Tim Michaels is ahead of him right now. And then over in Nevada, which I've always been very skeptical of, Republicans, it seems like that state's always just within their grasp. However, Laxalt's lead and Lombardo as well was ahead. It's different. There's something different. It's this working class shift, and it's drawing, you know, the Hispanic vote that is in a state like Nevada, a little bit more than you would see in national polling. So it's starting to look more like South Florida and South Texas as opposed to California. You know, the Hispanics are definitely not monolithic. But we see that in Clark County. He was polling extremely well, 70% of the vote. So I think those states all look good for Republicans. And that leaves Pennsylvania. I do think that Pennsylvania clearly has the momentum. And, we're going to pull that one again before Election Day. But he always had the makings of a victory in the poll, even though we had him down a few points. He always just had to consolidate that Republican base. And he led with independents, and I think he's doing that now. Georgia, despite the noise, I think Walker has an edge, and people are coming around to seeing that now, even with all of, the attacks. I think those attacks will backfire.
Finally.
We'll see with Arizona, though. I'm
Florida.
In the field right now in Arizona, Jesse. Florida's not competitive.
Look.
It just isn't.
Okay, good. Arizona, you know what? You're in the field right now. I'll be honest with you. Very, very rarely do I get any emotionally invested at all in races. These politicians are should all be used, treated like rental cars. Just use them for what you want and toss them back. I genuinely like Blake Masters, but I understand he's outside of the norm. How's my boy looking?
You know, this one's going to be close. I don't want to spit out any numbers, but I'll say this. Yeah. If Lake wins by 4 or 5 points, I think Masters is going to get over the finish line. He's being, I really would be derelict if I didn't say this. What Mitch McConnell is doing to Blake Masters is basically political malpractice, borderline criminal. If you're a base voter, you should be furious. That is the only state. From September 3rd to September 27th, where we measured it, it's the only state where Republicans did not outspend, for once, their Democratic opponents. They got killed all through the summer. Democrats just unloaded on them while Republicans held their fire. The fact that the race is still this close, when Mark Kelly has raised $50 million and Blake Masters spent $5 million, should tell you how winnable that seat is. But he needs help. And I did hear, he's going to get some help from Peter Thiel. Maybe the president's going to help him as well. He needs it. It's winnable. He's just Mark Kelly's, beating him over the head. And you can see the difference between him and others with that 4-year college degree white voter. And he can close that gap. But they're in Maricopa and they are many. So he's got to do it.
He's the people's pundit. Thank you, Rich. I appreciate it, man.
All the best, Jesse. All the best.
All right. We have a great light in the mood next. Go get him, Blake. Go get him. All right, before we get to light in the mood. Why does the Republican Party, the establishment Republican Party, why are they always so afraid of people like Blake Masters, my boy Joe Kent? Why? Well, because weak people oftentimes detest strong people. If you're some Washington, D.C. Republican who stands for nothing, and you hate your base, you hate the Republican base as much as Democrats hate the Republican base, you look out at somebody who actually wants to stand for something and fight for something, and frankly, you're resentful of it. You know what the GOP's problem is? They're low T. They are. I call them the low T GOP for a reason. I've joked with my buddy who runs Chalk, I joked with him that they should be sending a male vitality stack to each and every Republican senator, and honestly, I'm not kidding. I think they should. I think they should sign them off for a prescription. All natural herbal supplements 20% increase in your testosterone levels in 90 days with natural supplements, U.S. manufacturing. Oh, and did I mention hardcore anti-communists? Yeah, I think we should sign them all up. Plus, Chalk has a subscription, money off a prescription right now. Prescription, subscription. 35% off a Chalk subscription. Go, fellas, sign up to a male vitality stack. Ladies, a female vitality stack. You get 35% off the lifetime of the subscription with the promo code Jesse. That's a good deal. Then you never have to worry about reordering it again. Chalk.com, promo code Jesse. We'll be back. You know I don't watch the NFL anymore. I've told you about that. You've heard enough about that, but you also know that I miss it. And one of the things I miss about football, it's not the players as much. Yeah, I miss the players and watching them play. I miss why or how football makes fans so stupid. Have you ever been to a game? It doesn't even have to be a pro game, right? A high school game, college game. You go to a football game, there's something about football that turns fans into lunatics. So when I saw this video yesterday of the most dangerous gender reveal I've ever seen, I've got to be honest, it gave me a snicker.
Oh, a snicker.
Did he tear his ACL?
Oh, yeah.
He's still going.
Stay away from the players, man. I'll see you tomorrow.
Each morning, the President of the United States receives a highly classified briefing on the most important issues facing the country. It's called the President's Daily Brief, or PDB. It's delivered by America's spies and analysts. Well, now you can hear your very own PDB in the form of a podcast hosted by me, Brian Dean Wright, a former CIA operations officer. Each morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, I'll bring you 15 to 20 minutes of the most important issues facing the country, giving you the critical intelligence and analysis you need to start your morning.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors.
Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck, listen and subscribe.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency. It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.